This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. To my right, it is the sports machine, wine machine, ATM machine, Sean Levine. On the ones and twos, it is Brandon Kiley. Thanks a lot for listening. Coming up in about 45 minutes, we will take a trip inside the mind of the machine. But right now, let's get into the top stories of the day in Kansas City. BK, play that funky music.
Okay, now, from the beginning.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Check it out.
The top stories of the day, every day at 5 o'clock. The hits.
Cue it up.
One.
Hits are brought to you by Broadway Deli, a mostly Jewish deli for mostly not Jewish city, now open in the Crossroads and the official deli of 610 Sports Radio. As I mentioned in the update, the Royals have officially placed Adalberto Mondesi on the 10-day injured list. He has a left shoulder subluxation. That is in line with what Hunter Dozier said about the play when Adalberto Mondesi went down last night. Here's Dozier after the game yesterday.
He tried to make a heck of a play and looked like his shoulder kind of got caught up under him. Looks like it was dislocated. That's what he thought it was, but he seemed to be doing all right.
If you're looking for a positive spin on this, Cody Bellinger had the same injury earlier this year. You, of course, know Cody Bellinger is arguably the best player in baseball this season, so he has played just fine since. On the other side of things, Mondesi played 99 games, 170 games, 104 games. That's what he's done the last three seasons. This year, he's only at 84 thus far. See, Dot, it's a freak injury, but how much do these injury woes concern you moving forward?
We'll get into it more coming up in just a little bit after the hits. I will say when it comes to Adalberto Mondesi, you won't hear me say this very often. This is a real wait and see. I don't know. From talking to BK about it, from having Cody Tapp on the show earlier today, this can go in a couple different directions. He could be back in 2 weeks, and this was just a big mess of nothing. He could not play for the rest of the season. We haven't really heard anything else. I didn't hear anything come out from Ned Yost. So, BK, if you see anything come from Ned Yost, we certainly will play it for you guys in the 5 o'clock hour. This is the ultimate wait and see. I don't really know right now.
I feel like we're talking about Sammy Watkins all over again, an often injured player. It's hard to imagine. It's hard to believe that Adalberto Mondesi has been on the big league club for parts of 4 years. What sucks is the second half of the season, quite frankly, there wasn't a ton to look forward to. This team's not going anywhere in the standings, but it was all about improvement. I was looking forward to watching Mondesi, who had a pretty good first half of the season, tapered off a little bit in the last month. It was all about Mondesi and Keller. Keller's been all right. 118 innings pitch. He's 5-9 with a 4.25 ERA. But reason to get excited for the Royals the second half. Obviously, they're 4-1 since the break. Witt's batting average all the way up to .311. The Bubba Starling effect is just that, in full effect. My guy's up to .215, BK. How about that?
For what it's worth, Ned Yost said earlier today that they're going to rehab with Mondesi and see how he is doing in a week. So that's the latest update we have on that.
And Glenn Sparkman, a 5-hit shutout last night. It's not all bad for the boys in blue.
No, it is not all bad for the boys in blue.
Two.
Hit number two, Jeff Passan says the Royals are looking to make more trades. He says that the Royals should find a solid market for Jake Diekman, and they will, or they are willing, to pay down Ian Kennedy's salary to move him after his resurgence in the bullpen. You can find his piece on ESPN.com. C-Dot, I'm curious, do you think Ian Kennedy is the key to the Royals' trade deadline? Because we all agree Jake Diekman's going to be up out of here. They're going to try to find a trade for other one-year deal guys as well, like Billy Hamilton. Do you think that the key to the deadline for the Royals is finding a way to get anything of note for Ian Kennedy?
Go ahead and fade my music down. I'm not one to share private conversations, but I was told I could. I texted Jeff Passan. Now, for political reasons, he can't come on the show anymore. But that don't mean I can't tell you that I talked to Jeff Passan. Well,
contractual
today.
Reasons. He works for ESPN.
And other things. So I text Jeff Passan today And I asked him, so how much would the Royals need to pay to get out of Ian Kennedy's contract in a trade? He put he is owed around $22 million for the remainder of the deal. To get a decent prospect, probably $17 million of that, maybe more. So a pretty substantial amount of the $22 million that they have. And then I put, can I use this? That's the key to it being a good or great deadline, in my opinion. And this is what Jeff Passan said in reply. I don't know if that's the case because they can just flip him in the offseason as well. And I'm not sure that they're going to get a much bigger return now than they could this offseason. They may even get a better prospect in the winter with a thin free agent relief crop, and high prices for relief pitching tend to be commonplace. In that vein, they may feel like they can get teams to take on more money this winter, is what Jeff Passan said to me. If what Jeff Passan is saying is true, and I have absolutely no reason not to trust his reporting, I think that Jeff Passan has become the number one baseball reporter in the world since he has joined ESPN. I don't know what it was, being around Wovemore, or I don't know what's happening in Bristol.
Him and Buster Olney, probably one too.
Passan's been on fire since he's joined ESPN. If he's saying that he thinks that the Royals are going to have to pay $17 million of the $22 they owe him, they ain't trading Ian Kennedy this offseason. They ain't trading him.
It's only a successful trade deadline if they manage to get rid of all these guys. And it's a good start. They got back something from Maldonado. They traded Terrence Gore earlier today. I hope to see Billy Hamilton gone within the next week. Jake Diekman, somebody's going to want him. Ian Kennedy is the one that I'm just not sure, because obviously the Royals would have to eat some of the money. He's got too big of a contract. I just don't know what value he has to another team right now in the big league. So I'm with you. I wouldn't be surprised if, in the long run, Ian Kennedy's a Royal by the end of the season.
At the end of the year, he'll have 1 year left on his deal, $16.5 million. That is really interesting. I bet you if they took down like $7 million after the year, becomes a $9 million reliever, that's actually like a middle-of-the-road relief option. That makes a lot of sense.
That's why Jeff Passan is one of the best baseball reporters in the world.
Three.
That's why I'm just lowly sports talk host in Kansas City, and Jeff Passan is big time.
Final hit of the day is brought to you by Broadway Deli, a mostly Jewish deli for mostly not Jewish city, now open in the Crossroads and the official deli of 610 Sports Radio. Over at the Kansas City Star, Sam Mellinger wrote earlier today that the Chiefs believe there is a way they could re-sign basically everybody. He said, quote, the Chiefs have scenarios that they believe would allow them to have Mahomes, Jones, and Tyreek Hill on contract extensions, even with this offseason's deals for Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu, end quote. CDOT earlier today, the Falcons announced that they re-signed linebacker Deion Jones for a four-year, $57 million extension. He goes along with all the other guys that they've already signed to long-term deals. Maybe that's the comparison for the Chiefs. Look at the Vikings, look at the Falcons, look at what they've done. Could that be potentially what the Chiefs decide to do as well, with just re-signing everybody?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible. I mean, sometimes I think we make the salary cap too big of a deal. Let me explain. The salary cap can be finessed all the time in the NFL. Atlanta has just found a way to do it. Remember last year when the Los Angeles Rams were signing every available free agent? Like, you can make the salary cap work for you. But the important part is, eventually when the bill is due, you need to draft effectively to be able to manage it for a long period of time. That's what happened with Seattle. Like, Seattle drafted incredibly well, and then they decided to pay some of those players, but they couldn't pay all of those players. Well, then they didn't draft very well to replace those players, and that's why they've gone through a little bit of a downturn. That they're still a good team, but they're not the elite team that they were three or four seasons ago. That's going to be the real challenge when Brett Veach gets it. You've done a lot of the heavy lifting. Now you got to go get to Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl and all that kind of stuff. But once you pay Mahomes the $40 or $42 million season, then it is even more important that you draft well. It is even more important that you player develop well.
Yeah, you have to build the team through the draft and then kind of fill in the blank spaces through free agency and trades. And that's what the Chiefs have generally done. Now, granted, it's not a bunch of Brett Veach's draft picks. It's pretty much all John Dorsey. But look at the quarterback. Look at the running back last year. Look at the number one wide receiver. Look at the tight end. Look at the defensive tackle. All up and down the field, the Chiefs build it through the draft. You're right. That's how, if they're going to be successful going forward, they're going to have to do it, because once they pay Patrick Mahomes, they could easily find themselves in the same situation that, say, Green Bay found themselves in last year. Once you cut the $100 million check, and I think Pat is going to get about twice what Aaron Rodgers ended up getting long term, then other guys can't get paid. So at some point, the Chiefs are going to have to make a tough decision. Who's going to be the odd man out? Is it going to be one of the frontline players, or is it going to be more like a guy like Kendall Fuller or Eric Fisher, which to me is a more likely scenario to happen?
And that concludes the hits for today. I want to tell you guys a really quick story. So we're getting ready for the show, and for some reason, Sean has been really studying the Chiefs' schedule. That's how I know football needs to get here, because Sean has talked to me about the Chiefs' schedule five consecutive days.
Fifth toughest schedule in the NFL by the numbers.
So we were looking at the schedule today, and then Sean asked me very simply, do you think the Chiefs will win more games than they won last season? And I said 12's about the number. I think they'll win 12 or 13 games this upcoming season. Sean looked at me and said, I don't think so. And then BK in the back, Sean was basically Justin Timberlake, and BK was Lance Bass. That's who he was in this. Background singing. Oh, I agree. I'm with you guys. I don't understand you two. One day you'll have the Chiefs going 15-1, and Mahomes is going to win MVP again, and Mahomes might get to four Super Bowls. Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL and the biggest star in the world. And then the next, you got him being the sixth seed traveling to Cleveland in round one of the NFL playoffs. I'm the only one consistent here when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs, and it's tiring.
I disagree with that. I think we've both been very consistent. I think the team can be better than they were a year ago, yet the record might be a little bit worse. 12 wins? That's a lot of wins. So you're suggesting they're going to win 12, C-Dot, 13, 14, 15, or 16. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, this is my logic behind it. It's not even a schedule-based argument. Now, I understand the schedule and the fifth best and all that kind of stuff, but listen to me. I think that truly elite teams in the NFL win 12 games. Now, something injury-wise might happen that I can't see right now. I don't know. Maybe Tyreek Hill twists his ankle in game five when he gets back and is out for the rest of the season. I don't know.
Before you keep going, remind me real quick, how many did the Super Bowl champion Patriots win last year?
11.
Okay.
They won 11 games.
Okay.
But typically, not arguing the exception, typically your elite teams in the NFL win at least 12 games. I firmly believe that the Chiefs are an elite team in the NFL. So that's my baseline for them. If you don't think they're an elite team, nothing wrong with that. Then not elite teams or non-elite teams win 10 games. The Cowboys last year, they were a good team. They won 10 games. They went to the playoffs. They won a playoff game. Then it was over. I think that's the gap between, because we agree, 10 is the baseline
yeah.
for you're not a playoff team if you don't win 10 games. You're right. There have been teams that won less than 10 games that have won playoff games and went to playoff games, but typically in the NFL, you need to get to 10. I would then say the next step is that next layer, that next cream of the crop is 12 is normally the cutoff for you being an elite Super Bowl team. So the last 15 years, these are the AFC teams that have made the Super Bowl winning less than 12 games. Last year's Patriots team, who we can agree, the Patriots always tend to be the exception and not the rule. Yeah. I don't think the Patriots were an elite regular season team last year. I think they were a good team last year. A little bit different team, but they really turned it on in the postseason because they're the Patriots. The Ravens in 2012, who we could agree, not an all-time team, got really hot at the end of the season with Joe Flacco. No one would argue the Ravens were the best team. They just were the hottest team. And then the 05 Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger early in his career. Roethlisberger was not an elite-level quarterback at that time. In the last 20 years, only one AFC team has made the Super Bowl without winning at least 11 games, and that was the Baltimore Ravens. Man, typically, if you are a truly elite team and the cream of the crop team, like I believe the Chiefs to be, you at least win 12 games. So that's the baseline to me. I know Vegas might have their over-under at 10.5, but again, if you are one of the best teams in the NFL, if at the end of the season the Chiefs are one of the five best teams in the NFL, they have a minimum of 12 wins.
Again, Vegas usually isn't wrong about these things. They do have the over-under at 10.5. And if you look back to last year, and again, I don't want to break it down with the microscope and say they could have won this game, they should have won this game, they lost this game because of this. But if you just look at really two plays last year in specific games, the Baltimore game where Patrick Mahomes was a 48-yard pass across his body on fourth down, I'm not saying that's luck. I'm not saying that he can't do that again this year. But if that one pass isn't complete, that's another loss in the standing. Same thing with a left-handed pass against the Denver Broncos. If they don't complete that and get a first down, drive down the field, they probably don't win that game. So winning 12 games, you have to be good. You have to be well-coached. You have to have talent. But you also have to have a little bit of luck, which the Chiefs had last year. When we talk about talent, at least at the beginning of the year, we all agree they're not going to have Tyreek Hill. I don't know if it's going to be 2 games, 4 games, 6 games, but it's not going to be the same team that Pat started with last year when they really got the ball rolling against the Chargers and against the Steelers. He's not going to have the running back that he had to start the season with last year in Kareem Hunt. He's not going to have, you could argue, one of the 3-5 best wide receivers in the entire league in Tyreek Hill. And I know that you kind of poo-poo the schedule, but it matters. It's the fifth most difficult schedule in the entire NFL. The only way the Chiefs catch a break on that schedule is a lot of the difficult non-conference games are at home. week 3 against Baltimore, week 5 against Indy, and week 6 against Houston. Then later on in the season, they go on the road to New England and Chicago. It's a difficult schedule, but they catch a lot of breaks playing those games at Arrowhead.
You're right, but we could also play the what-if game on the other side. They very easily could have beat the Rams last season if they could get one defensive stop in the fourth quarter. They very easily could have beat the Patriots last season if they do it. They very easily could have beat the Chargers last season if they just get a stop on a two-point conversion. So I'm saying, I'm with you. Luck is on both sides, and typically the good teams tend to have more luck. Now, I know this is a very obvious point, but let me read it really quickly. Think about last season. And you're big on, look what happened last year. Yeah. That's a barometer for what happened. My 12-win theory, based on our perception of the teams, falls in line with my 12 wins is the baseline for an elite team. And then the further we get away from 12, how we feel about that team is typically very shaky. So last year, these were the teams that won 12 or more games last season. Chiefs, we agree, elite team last season. Yeah. Chargers, elite team last season. Yeah. Razor-thin margin between them and the Kansas City Chiefs. The New Orleans Saints, in my opinion, was the best regular season last year in the NFL. And the Rams, a clearly elite team. These were the teams that won 11 games last year. The Patriots, we agree, very fluky last year. Many of us thought it was over for the Patriots last year. There were reasons time and time again to believe that the Patriots were not an elite team and were not going to win the Super Bowl. The other team that won 11 games in the NFL was the Houston Texans. I'm sorry. There was a gap last year between the Chiefs and the Texans, at least how it appeared to me. I thought the Chiefs were clearly in a tier above Houston last season. We then can move down to the teams that won 10 games. And then Chicago won 12 games last year. Chicago won 12 games. Now we're going to the 10-win teams in the NFL. Baltimore, we agree. It appeared to be a little bit of a gap in terms of our perception last year with the Chiefs and the Ravens. And then Indianapolis. I saw the Chiefs and the Colts play in the playoff game. There was a pretty decent-sized gap. Now, it goes without saying, normally the teams that win more regular season games are the better teams. So if the Chiefs win 10 games, I'm not saying it's impossible for them to go to the Super Bowl because we see it happen before. It's happened 3 times in the last 15 years. They're just not the elite team that I think they are. The Cowboys were not elite last year. The Colts were not elite last year. They didn't win 12 games.
I guess I just don't see the gap that you do when you can bring up the Houston Texans, who have a really good quarterback, have a decent running game, have a good defense, and they won 11 games. And we're saying because the Chiefs won one more game than them, all of a sudden the Chiefs were a much better football team and one of them's elite.
But you're also a big believer of the eye test. I watched Houston play last year. I watched the Chiefs play last year. The Chiefs were a clearly better team than the Houston Texans. I watched the Chiefs and the Colts play each other last year. I looked at their schedules and who they beat, who they played. The Chiefs, even though they won 2 games, were a clearly better team than them. So I'm with you. The one game is different. I also watched the teams play in the NFL, and Houston was not close to the level that Kansas City was.
I'll say this about your 12-game barometer or baseline. The Chiefs better get there. Because if they don't, there's going to be another team in the West that does. I'm talking about the Chargers, who they have to play twice, including the last game of the season at Arrowhead. PK was talking about this yesterday, that the Chiefs are good enough and well enough coach and talented enough that no matter what their path is, they can get to the Super Bowl. I guess I have to push back a little bit on that. Think about the difference between the Chiefs and the Chargers' path last year. The Chiefs got to sleep in their own beds and, in theory, have a bye. Not in theory, in reality, have a bye, sit out the first week, watch everybody else play, and then have 2 home games versus 3 games on the road. As good as this team is, I'm not sure that they can take that. And I know teams have done in the past, 3 different teams, in fact, the Packers, the Giants, and the Steelers have all taken that road path, 3 playoff games, and then end up winning the Super Bowl. I'm just not so sure that's the path the Chiefs want to take.
BK, really quickly, what was the stat over the last 30 years? 5 teams have made the Super Bowl that won less than 11 games. That's just typically the cutoff. Again, I think the NFL, I know that every year there's outliers and all that things. It typically goes like this. If you win 10 games, you are a good enough team to make the playoffs. You are probably not a team that's going to advance in the playoffs. If you're a team that wins 12 or more, you got a legitimate chance to win the Super Bowl. So that's my metric. I'm not looking at the Chiefs' schedule. I understand they play a very difficult schedule. If they can't navigate that schedule and win 12 games, they're just not the elite team that I believe them to be. The other big story today in Kansas City is Adalberto Mondesi, who is out with a shoulder injury. Here's what Hunter Dozier said yesterday when he saw him.
Trying to make a heck of a play, and it looked like his shoulder kind of got caught up under him. Looks like it was dislocated. That's what he thought it was, but he seemed to be doing all right.
So that was Hunter Dozier yesterday and what he had to say about Adalberto Mondesi.
Dr. Dozier.
I'll push back a little bit when comparing him to Sammy Watkins. But one thing I think is disappointing, at least so far with Adalberto Mondesi, is I said at the very beginning of the year, BK, you were here, you weren't here yet. There was very little that the Royals could do to upset me on a personal level. I didn't think they were going to make the playoffs. I didn't think they were going to be that competitive of a team. I looked at their roster, and I'm like, there's no reason to ever get mad at this team.
And here they come, 4-1 the second half of the season. Watch out for the Royals.
Yeah, I'm watching out for them.
All right.
But when it comes to individual and player progression, that was something to track. I was curious to see how Jorge Soler was going to play this season, and Hunter Dozier and Adalberto Mondesi and Jacob Junis and Brad Keller. Like, this season was much more about individual than team. One of those things you were looking forward to this season is, can Adalberto Mondesi stay healthy and play a full 162? And not asking him to be some Cal Ripken Iron Man kind of thing, but can you play in 150 games this season, 148 games this season, so we get a really good body of work? Now, I don't know what's going to happen with this injury. As we said, he could be out a week, he could be out a month, he could have surgery and then sit out the rest of the season. But it's disappointing to always feel like once we're starting to kind of get to that point, there's another setback. Because so far in his career, we've seen a season of 47 games, 25 games, 75 games, and then 82 games. We've yet to really sit down with the full body of work with Adalberto Mondesi and then see kind of where he stacks up in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, much like Sammy Watkins, if somebody asks you how good is he if he plays a full season, your answer has to be, unfortunately, I don't know because he hasn't. For part of this season, he's put up good numbers, 7 home runs, 52 RBI, hitting .266, and playing a really good shortstop. The question is, what happens when he does that 162 games, not just one season, but 2, 3, 4, 5 years in a row? At that point, do we look at him as an elite player at his position? Unfortunately, we haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I mean, the elite player at his position, I mean, let's not skip steps with Adalberto Mondesi. Let's get the consistently staying healthy and consistently playing at a high level.
You just said he's been in the system for 4 years. At what point do you say, all right, now it's time to produce and stay on the field?
He's 23 years old. You're talking about him like he's Whit Merrifield. He's 23. He's the same age as Patrick Mahomes. So I hear what you're saying. The conversation you're having is like 3 years from now and not at 23 years old. Let's say he comes back and he plays 110 games this season and hits .265, .270 and hits 10 home runs with 60 RBIs. At age 23, that's not a bad season. Now, that's not a star season. That's not an elite season. That's not a bad season at age 23.
You're giving him 3 more years to produce like we thought he was going to. You're going to say 7 years into his Major League Baseball career, finally, Adalberto Mondesi is what I expected him to be? Hell no, that's way too long. I know he's 23, but look at the rest of the talent on this team and who the Royals are building around. When the Royals are good again, and I don't know if that's going to be 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, I can tell you, the only guy that's probably going to be a part of that team that's part of this team is Adalberto Mondesi.
Yeah, you're right. I just look at a lot of these guys, and I don't know if it's realistic to think. I mean, I'd say not. It's not unrealistic. 25, 26 is when you typically hit your athletic prime. I'm just not holding the 24-year-old to the you better be Francisco Lindor or it's time to start considering you a failure. Like, Hosmer didn't really hit until 25, 26, 27 where he consistently played at that level and became the player. I mean, think about Lorenzo Cain, how long it took. Think about Mike Moustakas and how long it took. Now, I would say that Mondesi seems to have a higher ceiling than them. I just think that sometimes, because I said this on Show and Vern when I went there for their shop talk, I think because Mahomes was so good so early on in his career, we think that's normal and expected for guys. I mean, not a lot of athletes just click at 23 years old, unless you're a true prodigy. Mike Trout clicked at 23 years old. Bryce Harper clicked at 23 years old. Manny Machado clicked at 23 years old. Maybe Adalberto Mondesi is not that, but still a really good baseball player.
I'm not sure, and I know this isn't what we're talking about, but you just mentioned it there in passing, that a lot of people do expect the same from Patrick Mahomes. Do you really think that now, when it comes to win-loss total, maybe, when it comes to overall production, maybe, when it comes to winning MVP, maybe, but do you really think Chiefs fans are out there expecting to see a statistical season like Pat had last year?
Who, from which one? Mondesi? I'm trying to
Pat, do you think Chiefs fans really expect 50 touchdowns and 5,000 yards from him next year?
No, I think they expect him to be an elite quarterback. And there's not who, name the elite quarterback under 30 that's not Patrick Mahomes. Like, there's not that many of them. Russell, like, if I had you make a list of who would you deem as the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, Mahomes is the only one under 30 years old. Like, it's just you typically don't hit your peak in terms of physical ability, understanding of sports, and all the things that happen. You typically don't find that at 23 years old. You typically find it like 28 years old. Some people are just far ahead of the curve. Mahomes is far ahead of the curve. Maybe Mondesi is just not that far ahead of the curve, which there's nothing wrong with that. Again, it took Hosmer till 26, 27 to really hit his stride and really take that next level. there's absolutely no shame in not being Francisco Lindor at 22 years old.
I agree with you. Pat is the exception to the rule where he was that good, that early, that consistent. I just think that Adalberto Mondesi at some point, and that point is now or next year, you have to talk about the pressure and actually producing opposed to the future.
No, you're right. And I just don't know if that time's now. I think that time is probably in two seasons. I don't think that time is today. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get back into the Kansas City Chiefs. Coming up, it's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive. Let's get into it. Let's finish this conversation about Adalberto Mondesi before we dive back into the Chiefs. BK, would you agree with that? This is where I'm at with Mondesi, and I could be wrong. I think typically we compare players to where they are, respective to their ages. Like, what makes Mahomes so great is Mahomes is doing things that Brady was doing at 31 or what Peyton was doing at 31. That typically you don't put those kinds of seasons together early in your career and when you are as old as Mahomes is. That part of the excitement with Adalberto Mondesi is, man, he could be Lindor, he could be Ronald Acuna, he could be those great players. I think we can now say he's not that. There's nothing wrong with that. Those guys might be Hall of Fame players at some point. That's how good they've been. Because I look at his first 4 years of his career. So this is where he's at. He hit 185 with two home runs in 47 games in 2016. At age 21, he played in 25 games, hit 170, had one home run. You remember they brought him up here. They sent him back. It wasn't really working. Last season, in 75 games, he hit 14 home runs, hit 276, had a really strong second half of the year. And then at age 23, this season, he has 9 triples, 17 doubles, 52 RBIs, 7 home runs, and hit 266. Now let's go to Francisco Lindor. At 21 years old, he was hitting 313 and had 12 home runs. At age 23, so the same age that Adalberto Mondesi is right now, 33 home runs, 89 RBIs. He played in 156 games and hit 273. The only thing I think we can definitively say about Mondesi is he's not Francisco Lindor or he's not Ronald Acuna. That doesn't mean that he can't go on to be a really good baseball player. Neither is Mike Moustakas, but he's a really solid baseball player. I think that's the only thing definitively we learned so far about Acuna.
Nobody's saying the ship has sailed on Adalberto Mondesi. I don't believe that. And his stats this year, if you extrapolate them out for a full season, they would have been pretty good. He would have hit 13, 14 home runs, knocked in 75, 80 RBI, and hit around 265. I would absolutely take those numbers for a guy like Adalberto Mondesi. But you're choosing to judge him based on his age. I'm choosing to judge him based on his experience. It'd be one thing if he was a 23-year-old rookie. He's not. This is his, and I know he hasn't played a full season. And the first year they brought him up was head-scratching. It was just for the playoffs. But it's not like this is his first crack or second crack or third crack at the bigs. This is his fourth year, which is usually when the time guys start to produce.
Well, we say that, though. The fourth year, I think you also got to put into context. Right, it is his fourth year. He's played in 229 games. So you're right. It is his fourth year. Not really by major league game standpoint. They're like, I'm just not really counting a year for Adalberto Mondesi at 21 in which he played 25 games and clearly wasn't ready to be here in the major leagues. They tried it, remember? They had him here over Whit Merrifield. It just clearly was not working in 2017, and they went a different route. I just don't count that against him because he never should have been in that situation.
We had our Royals insider, Cody Tapp, on earlier today, and I asked him if he thought that Adalberto Mondesi was exceeding his expectations, and he basically said he was at the beginning of the year, and he got off to a really nice start where he was like 40-something RBIs a month ago. Now he's at 52, so injuries certainly hurt, but he's tapered off in the last month.
Text line 69306, is Lindor the only comp used with Mondesi? I use Francisco Lindor because that's the comp that the Royals use for Adalberto Mondesi. Like, I didn't come up with that. I ain't smart enough to come up with that. I can play you the cut. Dayton Moore compared Adalberto Mondesi to Francisco Lindor. And if you look at the numbers, and they're in the same generation, Mondesi's 2 years ahead of where, or Lindor's 2 years ahead of where Mondesi is. He's not on that pace right now. I'm not saying he can't catch up and get to that pace, but by age 23, Francisco Lindor had 33 home runs and hit 270. That's not where Mondesi is right now.
I will say this, though. As much as we're talking about how Mondesi's disappointed, I'm looking at right now at a list of the players under the age of 25 that were as valuable as Mondesi over the last 2 years. So this is based on wins above replacement. I know people don't love this statistic, but it gives you a little bit of an indicator as to how good he's been overall with his game. Him and Manny Machado have basically been the same dude over the last 2 years in terms of overall value that they've brought to their team. That includes the defense that he plays. That includes the base running that Mondesi brings you. That includes the bat that he swings. over the last 2 years, and they've played basically the same number of games. Mondesi's played 157. Machado's played 162 over that span. They've been essentially the same value as a player. I think we all agree Manny Machado's pretty good at baseball, right?
Yeah,
he is.
So if Manny Machado is the same value to his team that Adalberto Mondesi has been to the Royals for the last two seasons, maybe we're just too hard on him. Maybe the kid has been really good, and he's just not the type of player that we expect. He's probably never going to be the guy that's going to hit 30 home runs and 40 doubles over the course of the season. Maybe his on-base percentage never gets above 35% over the course of a year. But he's going to be a dude that can steal you 40, 50 bags over the course of the season, play gold glove defense, and be a really solid and good contributor at the plate. Maybe that's his future.
You know what it feels like, and maybe I'm wrong. It feels a lot like Eric Hosmer. That I think there was a belief early in Hosmer's career that he was going to be that guy. That Hosmer was going to be one of the 10 best players in baseball. Hosmer turned out to be a really good player. He never got close to, I think, what the projections and what and quote-unquote what his potential is going to be. Maybe Mondesi is the same. Because right now, if you're telling me that Mondesi becomes the exact same player that Eric Hosmer was, I hit the button and I think that's a really good player to have. That's a player that if I'm the Royals, I try to re-sign that player today. Hosmer's not one of the 20 best players in baseball. Maybe not one of the top 30 players in baseball. He's a really good baseball player, though, that you can certainly build a franchise around because I've seen a team do it before.
I wouldn't be surprised if he turns out to be that good of a ball player. Now, I'd be surprised if he turns out to be Manny Machado or Francisco Lindor, these other comps we're talking about. And I know BK wasn't comparing him to Manny Machado, just talking about his wins above replacement, but that's a pretty small sample size that you're using for Adalberto Mondesi. Would I be surprised if he turned out to be Eric Hosmer as a big leaguer? A guy that can hit 280 and knock in 80 RBI and have a really good glove? No, I expect that.
Yeah, I mean, and I would say that's a really good season.
Absolutely.
I mean, Hosmer at his best is the guy that hits 280, can hit 25 home runs.
And you can build your team around a guy like that.
Yeah, and Mondesi would just be more valuable because he plays a different position that is certainly is more of a premium defensively on that position. We had a couple of audio cuts we want to play for you guys before we go inside the mind of the machine. Go back and check the podcast at 4:30. We had on Michael McCann. He is the legal expert for Sports Illustrated. This is a big reason he thinks that Tyreek Hill will be suspended by the NFL.
The player conduct policy is designed in a way that gives him tremendous discretion, and his conclusions don't have to match those of the legal system. We know that. We saw that with Ezekiel Elliott, where he wasn't charged with a crime, let alone convicted, where he raised pretty significant questions about his accuser in terms of her truthfulness, and he also denied repeatedly any kind of wrongful conduct, and yet he was still suspended 6 games. I think that the league's certainly concerned about its image, and particularly with sponsors. My suspicion is that Goodell, I think, would like to get things right, but his motivation isn't just justice, it's also protecting the brand.
I think what Michael McCann says there at the end is very important, and maybe something Chiefs fans don't factor in. It is as much about penalizing Tyreek Hill for his actions, which I think that plays into the process for Goodell, and setting a standard in the league of this is how we want you to conduct yourself as an NFL player. I also think it's protecting the image and protecting the brand. I think that the biggest knock against Roger Goodell has been you've been light on crime when it comes to violence against women or issues against women. I don't think that Roger Goodell wants to deal with another 72-hour, 96-hour news cycle of where he is getting pummeled for how he handled this. That will happen if Tyreek Hill gets a zero-game suspension or a one-game suspension. It might happen if he gets a two-game suspension. Now, I don't think it will be as loud, obviously, if it's a one- or a zero-game suspension. The only way that doesn't happen is if it's four. If it's four, that's just a standard NFL suspension that happens all the time and nobody even bats an eye because NFL players get suspended for 4 games all the time. I genuinely think that factors in. That doesn't make it right or wrong. I just think you would be naive to not factor that into Goodell's thinking given what we've seen in the past.
If it's four, that's certainly going to satisfy the NFL viewing public. Kansas City fans are going to be pissed off because I think they're kind of resigned to the fact at this point. I disagree that it could be 0 games. It's probably going to be 2 games and that four would be a little bit on the high end. When it comes to the NFL and how they're actually going to rule this, this is already his second chance. A lot of people say you deserve second chances. That's what I wonder is going to happen. Are they going to use his priors against him? Because I assume the entire time they were going to use his priors against him until a couple of weeks ago when we revealed the entire 11-minute, 27-second audio, which at least makes you question what happened back in 2014. So instead of just saying, here's what you did in 2014, because you've got priors, here's where your punishment is now, I think Roger Goodell, and this is why it's taken so long. This is why it took 8 hours. This is why still a couple of weeks after the conversation between Tyreek Hill and the NFL, we still don't have an answer.
I want to play this for you, too. This is J.I. Halsell. He is Salary Cap 101 on Twitter. One thing that bothers me in the contract negotiations between Kansas City and Chris Jones is it doesn't appear to be a whole lot of operating in good faith. For one side to take a, we will not talk to you unless you do X, I don't think that sets a good precedent. J.I. Halsell agrees.
It definitely doesn't set a positive tenor to the conversations. You know, at the end of the day, you want to try to find a win-win solution, right? You want to be able to craft a deal that the team can hang their hat on some metric in the deal, and the player and agent can hang their hat on some metric in the deal. And in order to kind of come to that common ground, you have to have a certain tenor in the conversation that encourages that. And when you, as a club, kind of take that hardline stance, well, then in turn, the agent and player say, well, if you're going to take a hardline stance, then we're going to take a hardline stance. It just doesn't create an environment towards getting a deal done.
I've been kind of saying this when it comes to the contract negotiation with Chris Jones. Something feels a little off in this. It doesn't feel like the Chiefs are willing to do whatever it takes to get Chris Jones to come back. If you're taking the private and certainly public stance of, we will not negotiate with you unless you show up to camp. We know you have to show up to camp by this day, so we're not worried about you holding out. I don't think that's really operating in good faith. I don't think that's really operating like that's a player that you feel like you need going into the season.
The last month, everything about the whole Chris Jones non-contract has surprised me, because I figured, I knew where this was headed, that the Chiefs have a really good player at a really important position who had 15 and a half sacks last year that they wanted to keep. The player understands his value in Kansas City and he can make a lot of money here. I figured at some point there would be a negotiation and they would come to a deal. At this point, I really don't know.
Coming up in just a bit, we will take a trip inside the mind of the machine. We'll do it next. It's
The Drive. The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Ned Yost held court today and had more to say about the moon. Can the Royals get together and have a video of Ned and Rex Hudler discussing the moon? That would go viral.
I'd watch.
I don't know why they don't do that. They both work at the same place. Seems very easy to set it up for 15 minutes. They have a conversation about the moon and make a video. I'll help them do it.
I'm telling you, Ned's the most interesting man in the world. A baseball manager, a hunter, and an expert on the moon? Who knew?
I didn't know you were such a fan of Ned Yost.
Love Ned Yost. Love the moon.
Have you ever been before?
To the moon?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
I've never been.
You'd like it.
Would you get on one of those? Would you get on a rocket ship?
Hell no. I'm a nervous flyer on a Spirit Airlines flight. I'm not jumping on a rocket ship.
Do you have the
same? Do you guys go skydiving? A little different question.
Well, I'm black, so no.
I'm white and still no.
The answer to me is any of those kind of extreme sports is not really our thing.
We got an email the other day asking if we'd want to do it. I think I'd do it if it was free.
Did you reply?
Yeah, I said I'd do it.
And you said you'd do it.
I think that's the indoor skydiving. I don't think that's
That. That's not real skydiving.
Yeah, I think it's the indoor. I could be wrong. I feel very strongly that it's the place on Metcalf. Oh. I could be wrong, though, but I feel very, very strong.
I'd still do it.
Because I've been there before, and I watched him do it. They asked me if I wanted to do it. I'm like, no, nah, I'm good. I'm no thanks. I'm okay.
I choose to not jump out of an airplane. Yeah, I'm good on that.
Just everybody has different likes and dislikes.
I understand. It's not my thing.
I've never had the desire when I've been flying Southwest. You know what would be really cool? If I jumped out of this airplane, God, that'd be such a thrill. Never thought that once in my entire life.
Well, on a passenger plane, that's generally not how it works. You can't just open the door and jump out.
That mindset starts from, man, it'd be cool. It'd be such a rush for me to jump out of here. Like, I've never, ever looked at a high cliff and thought, man, you know what I really want to do? Jump off here. I've never thought that. Not once in my entire life. Let's go inside the mind of the machine.
Real quick, guys, don't forget, Rivalry Renewed is right around the corner. Don't miss your opportunity to see KU and MU greats meet on the court. The game will feature Mizzou and KU alumni. It will benefit the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Kansas City. Coming up on July 28th at Silverstein Eye Center Arena. Tickets on sale now. The link for GA and VIP ticket packages can be found on our website at 610sports.com.
Missouri about to smash KU in that game. Last year, we just didn't have the bodies. That's what it was. We didn't have the bodies. This year, we got them.
Brandon Rush, Mario Chalmers, Drew Gooden. So you like Kareem Rush, Ricky Paulding, and those guys, huh?
Yeah, Brandon gave them absolute buckets.
I think he put in like 56 points or something in the game last year.
It was impressive. And they were playing from the college three. So for Brandon, who plays in the NBA, that's like a normal shot. It was incredible to watch.
Guys, fantasy football drafts right around the corner. Who are you taking? Andrew Luck or Aaron Rodgers? I'm sorry, or Phillip Rivers. I didn't mean to say Aaron Rodgers. That'd be really obvious. Andrew Luck or Phillip Rivers?
I'll take Rivers next year.
Except Andrew Luck?
Yeah, Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, Luck.
Julio Jones or Antonio Brown?
I'll take AB just because Julio doesn't score touchdowns.
Julio. Julio's going to get a bunch more yards.
Is he going to score touchdowns, though? Because he don't score a touchdown.
The Raiders don't score touchdowns either. So, yeah, he'll score more.
That's fair.
I know you've been really excited for Space Jam 2 coming out. See what happened?
I saw they got a new director.
They're changing directors. You worried about the movie?
Is LeBron still in it?
I believe so.
Is Ryan Coogler still involved?
I have no idea.
That's all that matters.
Okay.
You know who Ryan Coogler is, right?
No.
He is the director of Black Panther. He's the director of Vail Station. He's the director of Creed. Like, is he still there? Then that's all that matters. Someone said I had to start finding a different way to say Mind of the Machine. I love saying it that way. I don't want to say it any other kind of way.
You do drag that out quite a bit.
Mind.
Yeah, we know how you do.
Of the Machine.
Who wins more games this season, guys? Going to make you do a little bit of math. MU or KU and K-State combined?
That's a good question. I'll go KU and K-State combined. I think K-State gets the 6 or 7. I'll give KU 4 this year.
I think it all depends on how KU does, because I think 6 makes sense for K-State. If they get to 4, if KU gets to 4, I think that ultimately wins it over for that side of the bracket. But I'm going to take that side just because I've got faith that Les Miles will be able to get them to the 4th win this year.
I'm tearing up. That's the nicest thing you guys have ever said about KU. They're getting to 4 wins. Earlier today, we were doing our list of top 25 most important Chiefs players. We got to number 10 and number 9 with Sammy Watkins and Damian Williams. Which of those two guys is going to have a bigger impact on the team this year?
I think it's 6 in one hand, half a dozen in the other, honestly. I think you can make a very strong case for both of them.
That was a strong take right
there.
I mean,
journalism school is really paying off.
They're both equal, like, they're equally important to the 2019 Kansas City
Chiefs.
He said
Damian Williams versus Sammy Watkins?
Yeah.
I think Sammy Watkins.
They're equally important.
I think Sammy Watkins, because I would argue that, let's say it's a 4-game suspension, right? 4-game suspension for Tyreek Hill. You're going to need 4 games of a legitimate number one receiver out of Sammy Watkins. I'll be interested to see if he can do it. I think he can. I've always argued that he can. We'll see if we can.
My argument for Watkins would just be positional value, but I feel like just importance to the team, they're about the same. Like, yardage-wise, they're going to be very similar this year.
The Royals are 4-1 since the All-Star break. How long can they keep it up?
How long can they keep up playing 800 baseball?
Well, no. How long can they, I guess, you think they can play 500 ball the next couple of months?
No. They're not a good baseball team. Good baseball teams don't play 500 baseball for prolonged stretches. They play under 500 baseball because that's why they're bad teams. So, no, they're not.
What he said.
No glass half full from UBK? Figured you were going to be the guy to come on and say, yes, they could.
No, they're not a very good team, and they just lost arguably their best player. So, no.
Have you guys used the face app look or whatever it's called, the new face app thing, and how'd you look?
No, I have not used it. I have seen my picture used with the face app, but I have not used it myself.
Did you look like your dad?
No, I didn't look like my dad. I looked like Martin Lawrence from the movie Life.
Martin! I look like Paul Feinbaum. I got like these giant ears, and I'm not a good-looking guy. Have you used a BK?
You're not a good-looking guy in your current state.
I didn't say I was, but you're not allowed to say that. What else we got here? Let's see. Today is National Emoji Day. As an emoji user, which one do you use the most? I'm a big fan of the eggplant emoji myself.
Okay. Of course.
I'm just really neither here nor there. I'm just saying.
All right. Probably the sun emoji. Could have been left on.
I feel like we should move forward.
Sesame Street emoji has been on TV for 50 years. Do you guys have a favorite Sesame Street character? Believe it or not, I've got a little Levine's list here for you.
No, there's no believe it or not. We know you got a list.
Reverse order: Snuffleupagus, the Count, Ernie, Big Bird, Bert, Grouch, Cookie Monster, and the goat of Sesame Street, Elmo.
No, Ernie?
Did I leave Ernie off? Ernie should have been on that list.
Yeah.
Much love for Ernie.
Big Bird was 6th?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
KU's going to sell beer and wine at football games this season should all other colleges follow suit.
Pinots and punts. That's what they're going to have out there at Memorial Stadium. Pinot and punts.
I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, I know.
That's not bad.
I mean, I came up with that right now on the fly.
Hey, Ice Cube's Big Three's coming to town in a couple of weeks. You going to go? You love that stuff. Summer League basketball, G League, D League, whatever they call it, Big
Don't
Three.
Don't call the Big Three something like Summer League basketball.
Oh, he's
basketball.
Going. You're going, aren't you?
100% yeah. I'm going to be there.
Yeah, it's his thing.
I'm different than you guys. I like sports. I know that comes as a shock, but if
people are playing
sports, I want to watch it.
You like basketball.
And football. That's about it. That's about it. I don't like anything else.
I was like, don't pretend like you're out here watching the Yankees versus the Rays because you love that competition between the AL East.
No, you're right. I like basketball. I love basketball. I love football. I love when the Royals are good. Aside from that, I'm like, it's all right.
I love Pete Alonso.
How about Moscato and Miss Tackles?
Ooh.
That's the drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.